Hello, and welcome to The Collision, Collider's podcast about movies, TV, and more. I'm Matt Goldberg, the site's managing editor, and with me, as always, are associate editors Adam Chitwood.
Hello.
And Dave Trumbor.
Hey, everybody.
Today we will be talking about Olympus Has Fallen, the new film from Antoine Fuqua, and starring Gerard Butler, and... Only a Scotsman can save America from North Korea. Wow, this film. What I kind of wanted to talk about is, in my review, I focused on how this was, like, bad Die Hard. And even, I mean, granted, it's better than the actual Die Hard film we saw this year, but still, it's... That's a film comparison. But the other thing I wanted to touch on, and what I want to explore in this podcast... is the American response to terrorism in the post-9/11 age. And, boy, that's not a heavy topic at all. But the thing is, I find it interesting, because before 9/11, and even, you know, after the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, terrorism was still sort of this kind of abstract. It was this, just a nebulous bad guy. It's on the same level as bank robbers or just this kind of thing. It's like, oh, yeah, they exist in the world, but they're just sort of the generic bad guy. They can kind of come from anywhere. They want things. They're an antagonist that's very easy to set up. And they're just kind of there. And... after 9/11, terrorism becomes incredibly real. It's much harder to just say, like, look, terrorists. It's like, we know what terrorists are, motherfucker. This came onto our home turf, whereas before, terrorism was other people's problem. If you lived elsewhere in the world, you had to worry about terrorism, but not in the good old US of A. So, when looking at Olympus Has Fallen, I'm watching it, and there's a scene where North Korea just nails the hell out of Washington, D.C., because, according to the bad guy, it takes 15 minutes to mobilize the armed forces, and we did it in 13. And so you just see, and it's actually, in terms of excitement, it's the best scene of the film, but it's also the strangest, because there's moments where this gigantic, super... North Korean plane with miniguns on the side is
that they borrowed from the Expendables.
Exactly. It's rushing into DC and it's mowing people down and it knocks the Washington Monument over like it's a fucking Jenga tower, and blocks are falling on people, little CGI people running for their CGI lives. And it's insane. And then people, there's so much digital bloodshed, because it's all CGI blood getting splattered everywhere. But it's pretty brutal. But the way it's happening isn't feeling like Antoine Fuqua's making a comment or anything. It's just like, we're over 9/11! Whee! We beat it, guys! And go to the airport. No, we did not. Going through airport security says, every time you go through airport security, no, you did not beat 9/11 at all. You've not beaten terrorism. Look at wars, even though those are winding down. We have not beaten it. We'll never beat it. The war on terror is a war on a noun. This just got political. Let's go back to movies. With this notion of Olympus Has Fallen, it almost felt like a throwback to a 90s film, but not in the fun way. Like, I found Jack Reacher to be a kind of a nice 90s throwback. It wasn't over CGI. It was very nuts and bolts. Liked that movie. This film felt kind of like we couldn't go back to that. Granted, it's not a fun film. It's too brutal to be fun. But even then, it feels like we just can't really go back there to that notion. Do you think we can ever go back, or is that an unfair assumption?
No,
I don't know. I mean, go ahead, Adam.
Well, I mean, that's kind of how I felt when I was watching it. I mean, it did feel like if this movie came out in 1998, I feel like it would have been just, you know, just another one of those, you know, action movies that always come around, and, you know, you watch them and they're fun and terrorism and it's entertaining. But the way that the violence in this movie was portrayed, it's not only brutal and really bloody, but it's also played with a sense of realism that we really haven't seen since before 9/11. I mean, you know, everyone in Hollywood kind of tried to tread lightly on the issue after 9/11. And if you look at the action films after that, even ones that deal with stuff in America, the action is very – it's very much like this is a movie. This is an action movie and everything's kind of a little bit over the top. Like even like Live Free or Die Hard, it's like, you know, this isn't like this couldn't really happen. But Fuqua approaches the action in Olympus Has Fallen with a sense of realism, and the level of violence is crazy blood, even though the like the CGI is really awful in that sequence you were talking about. It's still – it's disturbing, and I feel like this is the litmus test to say nope, like we can't – like. I mean, I'm speaking this for me personally. I was in mm-hmm. – my press screening was also a promo screening, and there were people that were cheering and clapping. So I guess some people
in
were
Oklahoma?
Like, it's fine.
You
yeah,
don't
I guess
say.
Like, oh, it's
for what exactly? That's what I'm – where exactly were they cheering and clapping? Like for
– like when the good guys like get the bad guys okay, and it's just okay. so bloody and just like, oh, yeah. Like, yeah. Get
it's
the,
that bloodthirsty
that
moment of it. It's that
yeah.
bloodlust.
They weren't even like – I don't even know. Like it was good. There were good one-on-one fights when Butler goes up against, you know, these sort of faceless – terrorists that come in, that's fine. There were good one-on-one fights, but I never really felt like that sense of like, yeah, America, hurrah, we got, you know, it, there. Yeah. I didn't feel like there was that scene.
You didn't feel that when Gerard Butler takes a bust of Lincoln and smashes it into a guy's head? Because that got some cheers out of my audience in Georgia.
Well, there it is.
But to answer your question, I just think that no, like this shows that this kind of movie is just uncomfortable now, and it just doesn't really work. It hits too close to home, and that's,
I think that's
my
the issue. Yeah, the issue with the tone of this was that on one hand he wanted to go brutal. He wanted to shock people into, I don't know, out of their complacency. I can go into why I say it like that, because I actually talked to Fuqua in a quote unquote. Government employee who was basically like a retired Secret Service guy, who was a consultant on this picture. I talked to them back a couple months ago when they were still finalizing a lot of things, so I can kind of speak on what his intentions were for this film and sort of the way he was approaching it. But it was interesting to note that he wanted this brutal, pseudo-realistic, forgetting about the CGI effects, this realistic violence, but then completely left out the intelligence factor, and I mean that in terms of both an intelligent movie and intelligence as what the government uses to prevent terrorist actions from happening and to secure information. That was completely left out because we were just like caught with our pants down kind of thing. In this day and age, I don't think that's even a remote possibility. When these guys were in the room talking about like this could happen, this, you know, we've put together an action sequence that could theoretically happen, and then I saw it today and I was just like if this happens, then we pretty much deserve what happens to us, because this is just complete failure on all fronts.
Well, not only that, see, and going back to the reality of it that they're trying to paint, and something that kind of made me uncomfortable mm-hmm. is, Adam, what you were saying, sort of the terrorism films, you can also note that the terrorists are usually Euro trash, unless mm-hmm. they really are going for something more authentic, but still not something more dramatic, like The Kingdom. The Kingdom is intended to be, there's action in it, but it's more dramatic. If you're going for a straight action film, you usually reach for the Euro trash because no one is like, oh God, Russia's pissed at us again. No, it's not fucking Russia. They don't care. It's just like a small band of angry guys who are just like, bring back the communism? I don't know. They want something.
Bring back the communism.
Exactly. Bring back the communism. Whatever they want. But no one is on the lookout for crappy Eurotrash. They're just white people, basically. Let's put it that way. They're white people, and it's okay. It's the PC terrorism, as if that makes any sense. But with this film, I don't stay up nights being like, man, I hope North Korea doesn't go out of control. Like, North Korea just seems like that sort of crazy person. They're the people you put in Team America because they don't seem right. that threatening.
Or a Red Dawn remake.
Or a Red Dawn remake, exactly. So when you bring them over to be the bad guys of this film, you can't really buy into them, and yet at the same time, they were chosen because they're part of the axis of evil, air quotes. Mm-hmm. And so he obviously knew that. He wanted to make it, like, you know, like you said, Dave, seem real, mm-hmm. but it's not fun that way, except now it's caught in this net of, we want real terrorism, but it's such a stupid movie. It could almost work as like trashy B movie fun.
I compare it to like a True Lies. Like this was obviously, it was like 7 years before 9/11. So I mean, that wasn't even, you know, terrorists, blah blah blah, getting their hands on nuclear whatevers. Like we didn't care. It was just a fun movie, and Schwarzenegger was a great, you know, lead role to handle that. But that was the thing. It had that fun element. There was a lot of humor in it. It wasn't supposed to be taken seriously. And this, you know, Olympus Has Fallen, the filmmakers wanted people to take it seriously, but then it almost seems like they didn't take it seriously themselves. There were things in there that were just so like laughable and so ridiculous that I feel like they just like ran out of time and they were just like, fuck it, it's good enough. On to the next thing.
This almost feels it never happened.
It's just great.
Like the sequel to Red Dawn that never happened. It's like North Korea got us again. So crafty. Wah, wah. I can't believe. And it's like one of the kids from Red Dawn is now the president. He's like, not again. I want that movie to happen now that I say it out loud. But it's, you got these like thinly drawn characters who you don't care about. That's the problem. It's such a serious tone and a shitty, trashy script. And how do you not realize it's such a crazy disconnect there from screenplay to director?
Yeah, I don't know. That was the disparity for me throughout the entire film, and it prevented me from ever really getting into it. I mean, yeah, there were some rah-rah moments, and like you said, there were some throwbacks to the 80s, 90s kind of action that was, it was fun, but then you kept thinking like, oh, this isn't really supposed to be fun, so I can't have fun. And that was the thing. It's like, if you want to make a serious movie, you have to do it in a dramatic approach like you mentioned other films earlier. Or like a Zero Dark Thirty, something like that. You can't
glamour it up, not in that mix of tone, and certainly not after 9/11.
No, it doesn't work. Yeah. And this is, I think, at least evidence, if not proof, that that approach doesn't work. Good try. We'll see again in a couple months.
Well, that's what
I feel like tone was the key here, that they just completely missed the tone. But despite all, I mean, even despite the kind of unsettling violence and everything, I found myself actually kind of enjoying it. I mean, I'm probably going to get shit for this, but I will say I was not bored throughout the movie.
No,
I wasn't
bored either. It's very well paced.
Yeah.
And I don't like Gerard Butler. I've never liked him, but I liked him more in this than I've ever seen him. I don't know why.
That is an excellent question, because he's been better in other things.
Yeah. But I like him at least coming back to action, because I don't know what the hell he's been doing for the last few years, other than rom-coms with Katherine Heigl every other week. But
just shitty projects all around. Rom-coms, Chasing Mavericks, just abysmal choices.
I feel like Chasing Mavericks, right? I didn't see it. I don't know really much about it. I feel like that was just kind of like a personal interest for him. But
possibly.
I don't know.
Still
I like
a bad
having
film.
Him back. Was it? I like having him back in action, though. I think that's where he belongs. And honestly, like, we're seeing more of a resurgence of these kind of like the macho guy in the action role. A little bit of a resurgence. I mean, I've seen like three promos that all star Dwayne Johnson in it, just jacked out of his mind. I can't keep movies separate anymore, because G.I. Joe looks like Pain and Gain looks like Fast and Furious 6, but at least we're seeing these guys sort of start to like fill in that area that's
been missing. Like, so they're sort of the resurgence of the macho, and there feels almost like a double-edged sword to that, because there is sort of that feel-good aspect, and I wonder if when G.I. Joe comes along next week, if we would look at that and like, that's how you do it right.
I don't know if we'll ever say that.
I don't know. I like Rise of Cobra. I think Rise of Cobra is like watching, it's like watching G.I. Joe, the Rise of Cobra is, if a kid is playing with action figures, this is what he sees in his head. That's, to me, is Rise of Cobra. And G.I. Joe Retaliation clearly doesn't take itself seriously at all. If it did, that would be strange, because it has ninjas. But sure,
like, ninjas aren't real. Ninjas are totally real. There's one behind you right now.
That's untrue.
That's what Adam was saying, like with tone too. It's just, if you miss with tone in a movie, that's your dividing line. Like, sometimes it doesn't matter how good the acting or the script or anything is. Sometimes it's really that tone that at the end of the day is going to determine whether somebody loved or hated the movie. And I think with this one, it missed. With G.I. Joe, we'll see.
Well, the one that's really the big question mark is White House Down, which comes out in June. We still haven't seen a trailer. It's from Roland Emmerich, who really, although anonymous, to its credit, not a bad film, but he doesn't really know how to do small scale But at the same time, could he make this premise work? Can this premise work at all? Going back to our central point, can you do terrorism with any semblance of reality, any sense of stakes? Because I think what Fuqua was trying to do is he was trying to make the threat seem real so that you were drawn in more, that he still wanted to give you the rah-rah action, but really put you on the edge of your seat in terms of the brutality. I think the brutality backfired in a big way. So the question is can you ever manage this? Because it's not just the terrorists, but it's also that direct attack from where that terrorism happens. So for instance, before we started recording, I was talking with Adam and Dave about how it feels like there could almost be a deleted scene of the Pentagon being attacked. But you couldn't get away with that, could you?
That's the question, though. Like, this is it's such an outlandish premise. Like, how does one – and I feel like it's one that belongs in the 90s. Like, oh, like they take over the White House. Like, it feels like it's not real because no one ever attacks America. But in the post-9/11 world, we know that we are not – invulnerable to these attacks, and we know that they can happen. So when you see someone taking the White House, you're like, oh, you know, like the World Trade Center, yeah, but taking the White House, that doesn't make sense. Like that's an outlandish premise. And I feel like we might have bought into it more pre-9/11 when it was all like – it was when you went into an action movie with domestic terror attacks, it almost in your mind felt like this is a fantasy movie. Like this, none of this can happen. And I wonder how that affects – action movies going forward and portraying these kinds of things. Like, how does Emmerich make this premise work? I mean, he's always been good at blowing shit up real good, and he makes fun movies. So I'm interested to see if he tries to balance the tone with humor. And that's the thing we didn't know about Olympus Has Fallen, and right. We don't know about White House Down, is how does it happen? And they kept that kind of out of the trailers. I had no idea how they were gonna. I hadn't thought about it until I was watching it, and then I was like, this is horseshit. Like, there's no way this can happen.
And I saw a lot of the opening scenes. So the attack on Washington, D.C., also the initial sort of like character building scenes between Jared Butler's character, Mike Banning, the president, president's wife, and son. So there's a lot of character building in the beginning. So I saw that scene. I saw the attack on D.C., and that was about it. That's all they showed us. So initially I was like, that's a bit hokey with this attack, but I get what you're trying to do. You're trying to do like your version of shock and awe, I guess. I get it. That's fine. His approach, so it was Fuqua and the Secret Service member, they were basically saying they wanted this film to get under people's skin in a way, and this is not a direct quote, but it's what they told us, that wanted to sort of like mobilize people and get people angered up again, so to kind of like remind them of the way that they felt on September 11th and the weeks and months and years afterwards.
Oh God, I didn't even know that.
I know.
Was Glenn Beck a consulting producer on this shit? Jesus.
What's that?
I said, was Glenn Beck a consulting producer? Remember with his 9/12 war shit?
It was kind of that feeling. Like, I don't know how seriously they spoke about that, but it was fairly serious in tone from my understanding. They wanted people to understand that was a weird thing for me, is they wanted people to understand that we need defense spending and intelligence to prevent things like this from happening again, but then there was no intelligence to the film.
Right. And just taking a couple steps back, I don't think any of us believe like this could happen. This is on the verge. Because Dave, like you said, this exists in a world with no intelligence. There's also the magic Cerberus thing. This film goes in such a roundabout way where the bad guy says, I don't want to like fire the nukes because I know you changed the codes. Instead, I'll go to this failsafe, which will basically set off the nukes, but I need codes, which the codes won't change because it's the failsafe. I'm like, the failsafe is so much worse than just dealing with this directly.
And it was so anticlimactic.
It was. It was totally anticlimactic. But I don't think any of us can happen, but I think the thing that Dave, it sort of weirds me out to think that those guys think it could, or at least we're pushing that line of bullshit, is the notion that I would believe they were trying to push is that terrorism hits close to home, except we've already seen it. We were not hit close to home, we were hit at home. And when you see the scene of, like, the American flag falls slowly, and you know it'll be pulled back up again, you know they'll put the flag back up again, how do you not immediately start thinking of the flag at ground zero being raised again?
Or even when the Washington Monument was collapsing, like, to me,
going to take it down all the way.
Yeah.
And again, it's sort of this notion of in a pre-9/11 world, that could sort of seem like, whoa, that's intense. I can't believe that could ever happen. But in a post-9/11 world, it seems, again, I don't think either saying like this attack is right around the corner, but it's that feeling of it. It feels like it's preying on something that actually happened, and yet at the same time ignoring the effect of it, ignoring the emotions or the reality of it. And that's so maddening to me, that it would just kind of try to thread this awful needle of taking the worst of both sides. It's going to take the carelessness of a pre-9/11 world that we could get away with, and then try to prey on the emotions of a post-9/11 world and those fears. And gosh, Dave, again, what you're saying about those guys saying, trying to put us back in that post-9/11 mentality just really kind of churns my stomach, considering
I want to clarify that it was the consultant that said that and not directly Fuqua, but I mean, the guys were together. They were together to obviously work on the movie, to provide some intel on like how the Secret Service kind of works. And yes, a lot of these, they use a lot of the code names, you know, like the Mustang and the Total Package or whatever, like Olympus. They use a lot of the same code names. So he was kind of there for a little bit of realistic approach to how the Secret Service works. I don't know if maybe he got carried away with what he wanted to see from the film. I don't want to put words in Fuqua's mouth, but that was this other guy. I will speak to the fact that the consultant did say that they have to be prepared for pretty much anything. So they do think up crazy scenarios like this. They do think up things like, you know, like alien invasion, like another Emmerich film. So they do have contingency plans for things like this. The PIOC, the bunker, presidential bunker, things like that are real. The scenarios to get them there and what happens from there, the chain of command, a lot of those things are based in reality. But then, like you said, it just – the tone of this thing was so far off that it had a foundation in reality, and then it just kind of unraveled from there.
What's the plan for when the battleship falls on top of the White House, like in 2012? What's the procedure for the 2012 disaster?
Well, I was wondering.
It's a consultant too. Yeah.
I was wondering after I saw this movie, and I felt personally that it, like in a post 9/11 world, this kind of movie doesn't really work anymore. Obviously, the box office speaks to something different, but I mean, we'll see if it kind of has lasting power. But what do you guys think the action genre looks like post 9/11? Because this is really the first pre-9/11 action movie in the post 9/11 world, in my mind, that deals with domestic terror attacks and takes things seriously. Has the action genre been co-opted by superhero films? Do you think? I mean, I'm looking at kind of the list of action movies that have come out in the 2000s, and it seems kind of full of, it feels like sci-fi and kind of outlandish and superhero and over the top has kind of taken over, because we didn't really want to sit down and watch something like Olympus Has Fallen, like say in like 2002 or 2003. That's just not something the public was ready to sit and, you know.
I feel like if you want to take on anything related to terrorists, especially if they're going to be hitting close to home, or if it's a military operation overseas, something like that, that's, you know, 99.99% now in sort of the drama range. That's sort of in the more serious, less blockbuster action-y flick that's been kind of lumped into these action dramas, I think. Or more like you can focus on you know, character studies within that setting, but it's not going to be like the 80s, 90s action. I mean, I don't know. We'll see if White House Down and Olympus Has Fallen, you know, kind of show people that there is money to be made again in that. But I think at least for the past 10 years or so, it's been sort of a drama-only zone. And maybe it opened the realm for things like comic book movies and stuff that is more fantastic and requires a little more imagination and is stuff that couldn't conceivably happen. Maybe that's why we went in that direction. Yeah, maybe that's why we went that way, because it's more fun. It's not actually going to hurt anybody or occur in real life. Maybe it's more of an escape. I don't know. It's an interesting approach.
I agree with Dave that it's definitely the fantastic supernatural approach gives us that safe distance.
Yeah.
Where as long as it's aliens attacking New York, no problem. We can deal with that. Just send the Avengers on them.
Or Godzilla.
Exactly. Yeah. But with, I would also add, and Dave, this is going back to an earlier point you made, the macho side of it. I think going to the macho side of it is throwing back all the way to the 80s. Where,
yeah, definitely.
Again, the terrorism was just sort of this nebulous idea for America, where it's like, just send a manly man out to take him out. And that works some of the... I mean, audiences have clearly gone for the Expendables, but at the same time, no one showed up for The Last Stand. I'm amazed at that, how that film tanked. I was astonished. But, again, Hollywood is making those movies again, but they're doing it in the mold of, let's stay away from the present, the messy present, and let's go way back to sort of just the brawn and guns and just nothing political or just something so, in its own way, outlandish. I mean, that's the 80s still. The Stallone, Schwarzenegger, exaggerated person, just a larger-than-life figure. So either way, we're going to something that is bigger, and I think that's also just goes to what audiences want. They want bigger. They want more. But again, it also gives that escape from reality even more distance. And what Olympus Has Fallen tries to do is pull us back to a reality, but it feels twisted because of the tone and what it's the way it's played out.
And because it had that macho figure, that you have this idea in your head of this kind of like 80s action movie with a brawny male lead, but then you're plunking it down into like this pseudo-realistic post 9/11 setup, and that is a clash that I don't think. I mean, I don't know how the general populace feels about it, but that clash kind of bothered me throughout the film. It was like I couldn't 100% and just enjoy the action that was taking place on film. There were a couple scenes that I did. I did like Butler's fight scenes and the fact that he was getting knocked around in like a John McClane kind of way a couple different times. But this was like a McClane kind of on steroids and with, you know, special forces training. We talked a few weeks ago about how every male lead action hero now has to be like special forces, black ops, you know, dyed in the wool hero.
Exactly. And to me, that left no stakes. It's a diehard film, but it's okay because he's special forces and he's like, just tell me what to do. And so he just becomes this thing that gets moved around with absolutely no personality.
Yeah, and he says that to the people that are in charge.
Exactly. He just says, point me.
Use me.
Yeah, use me. Wow, exciting.
I think that's an effect of the Bourne movies, really. I think that like once Greengrass and Damon got to that, like those crazy action fight sequences that weren't like – it took away the guns and explosions and it was just hand-to-hand combat of two people really skilled. I think that's kind of what we're seeing now is, you know, everyone, like from Batman. I mean, he knows everything. So
I think that's also important, though, not just the knowledge, but going to the point of – the more quote-unquote realistic side needing drama, even if it is superheroes with The Dark Knight or Bourne, which is a spy film, but again, with once Greengrass takes over, it's very, very much a post-9/11 commentary. And so those films that I think also really stuck with people and were very well-reviewed and very successful, people saw those movies and they got both things. They got what they wanted. They got a thoughtful film if they wanted that. There was subtext there, but they also got an exciting film. And again, to rag on Olympus Has Fallen, it's like the inverse of a good film. It does the exact opposite of hitting those cross sections. It's too dumb to be fun, and it's too serious to be taken. It's too dumb to be taken seriously, and it's too serious to be fun. It's
to be fun, yeah, to be enjoyable.
And yet it made, like, what, $30 million at the box office?
Yeah, I think $30 million. But like you said, we'll
see
what has
legs,
it
did
especially
$30 million,
with G.I. Joe.
But it did $30 million, but the Croods beat it. So
yeah,
I think.
Well, that's DreamWorks getting back on top. So
indeed.
Well, and you've got G.I. Joe coming out next week, too. So if people really want their, you know, satisfy their action urge, probably just going to see that. I don't know. We'll see what next week does. But yeah, we'll see. The one thing I do worry about, though, because of the tone of this, like if they wanted to take it seriously and really remind people of how they felt post 9/11, that's one thing. But now the fact that you've sort of taken a realistic event and you've fictionalized it to this point, I almost feel like it's going to desensitize people even further. Like if we've gotten to the point that you need a movie to get you motivated and angry and into action, that, I mean, I think that speaks more for sort of the American people than the filmmakers.
The short-term memory of it.
Absolutely.
I think that's an excellent point. The fact that we can just sort of let it fade away to something where, we don't want to see it. And I think that repercussion came with the Iraq wars, where it was sort of a war out of sight, out of mind, because there was no draft, no nothing, and we could just eventually push it off to messy headlines. And then the quote unquote manufactured drama of it, with the sort of the Jessica Lynch, was it? Is that the person they saved? Pat Tillman, where they reconstructed that until the reality of it was he was shot by friendly fire. Well, let's change that around. That's not very heroic at all.
Well, I mean, now that this is the 10-year anniversary of us getting into the Iraq and Afghanistan
and
wars.
Largely unmarked, too, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
I don't know. I've been watching or listening to a lot of NPR, so they talk about it pretty
much
every
NPR has this weird obsession with covering reality.
I'm not going to talk about madness, but
they want to cover actual things that are happening.
Well, let's put it this way. The Iraq war, the 10-year anniversary went pretty much unmarked, whereas the 9/11 10-year anniversary was noticed. But again, I mean, it took so long just to get building on the tower, get going, and people just kind of want to move past it. They don't want that memory, and yet at the same time, they're like, you know, it's a driving force, and yet you don't want to look at it. And I can, in some ways, respect films that are trying to go into that messiness of it, where you don't want to deal with it head on, but you can't ignore it entirely.
Right, exactly.
It's part of our history, and it changed the American character in fundamental ways, or at least the way it's tough to say, because again, you have this notion where we want to latch on to past things, like we go back to the 80s action movie and the superhero stuff, but it's almost like we're running from what we know is already there, the world that we cannot go back to.
Right. Yeah, like you literally can't go back to it, except now through these films, and I just don't know if it's that we're not ready to just accept what happened, move on, and, you know, be able to enjoy the films without those two worlds kind of colliding, or if this is just the wrong film at the wrong time. It might just be that the tone of this film was the whole reason behind the fact that we didn't seem to enjoy it all that much. We'll see with Emmerich's coming out whether he's able to separate reality from fiction and give us an enjoyable film that's at least a little tonally a bit stronger, a bit more focused.
Yeah, I agree with what Matt said. You can't ignore it. You can't pretend like it didn't happen.
Right.
So you have to go into it with a sense of tact and with a sense of knowing what you're doing. And I'm assuming – I mean, Emmerich's a veteran of – I mean, he's been doing this for years, and I think he knows what he's doing. So it'll be interesting to see what direction he takes with it, because, I mean, there's no way around it when you're dealing with something like this serious and with a domestic
terrorist
terror
in the White House.
Yeah, people remember. But another thing, too, and that I was thinking of it, and as I was thinking of the box office of Olympus Has Fallen, is we're starting to see people who were born after 9/11 or too young during 9/11
exactly.
to remember it are the teenagers now that are going to the movies.
Right.
Exactly.
And do they care? Do they have any – I mean, that's what's – it'll be interesting to see if, you know, everyone says the film industry is cyclical. Will we see a resurgence of those action movies from the 90s that, you know, just kind of willy-nilly, like, just crazy terrorists all over America? Are these kids going to – that's an interesting question. Like, what do these kids bring? Like, I'm sure they've read about it in history books, but what are their feelings and emotions towards it?
Well, that was kind of my point that I made earlier, is the fact that you've now – they're like, oh, okay, we can wait 10 to 12 years, and now it'll be okay to revisit this and kind of do a fictionalized take on it. And Adam, to your point, I think it's because this new generation that's coming up and watching these films doesn't really have – it's sort of like, you know, our take on
Vietnam.
Vietnam or the Cold War or things like that, things that we grew up hearing about, but we have no context. And it's not like it's our fault. It's not their fault they weren't born or can't remember 9/11.
Yeah.
It's just that this is now sort of co-opting that realistic event and fictionalizing it in a way to just bring in box office dollars. So, again, I don't know if it's just to capitalize on the length of time that it's been since then. It's like, okay, we've put enough distance behind. It's time to get back to making – fun movies again. We'll just use this as a foundation, as a jumping off point. I don't know if it's I still don't know how I feel about that, because the filmmakers obviously lived through it. So on one hand, I do appreciate the fact that they want to remind people that this actually happened and sort of like angry up the blood again, the American sort of patriotism. But it still cheapens it in a way. So that's a really interesting kind of contradiction with the way we view things, the way the filmmakers view things, and the way this up-and-coming generation of audience members do.
The good news is that this conversation is way more intelligent than Olympus Has Fallen. It almost feels the movie feels unworthy of this conversation, but actually I like films that are kind of dumb and yet they still lead to larger questions. And so while I don't think this is exactly what Anton Fuqua and that Secret Service agent were hoping for, it's again, it lets us look back, and again, looking forward, that's also an interesting question, what kind of films we're going to get. And I think you guys are right. I think we're going to start going back to the 90s a little bit, not just because of that's how nostalgia works and we're moving into that 90s world, which makes me feel old, but also really just like, man, the 90s kind of sucked. Like, people who are in the 80s, like, yeah, 80s, look at all those awesome TV shows. Like, the 80s nostalgia feels much more powerful than 90s nostalgia. 90s nostalgia is like, there's going to be Girl Meets World. And I'm like, oh, come on. Was Boy Meets World that amazing a show?
I mean, I watched it religiously, so, but I think it's the Midnight in Paris thing of just like, you're always looking past, like, one generation behind you. You mm-hmm. like that generation, and then just, it's a never-ending process.
Yeah, well, I would say to those people, please watch Detention, because you're going to have a lot of fun with that movie. Or just watch Detention anyway, it's great. But actually, let's move on to other recommendations, if you guys are good.
Sure. Yeah, sure, we can do that.
All right. Dave, what do you got for us?
I wanted to go with one of Fuqua's other films that I actually enjoy as my sort of like if it pops up on TNT or TBS. I like King Arthur just because I like his take on sort of the Arthurian legend. But I'm actually going to go with, because of the topic of conversation today, with 2001's Swordfish by Dominic Sena. Not a great film, but fun. I mean, it was, I thought it was fun. I was reading some reviews and stuff to get kind of refreshed on it. And a lot of the reviews thought it was too, not just heavy-handed, but also just like too dark and there was no humor to it. But I remember it being kind of fun. Now, you got to remember that this came out in June of 2001. So we're talking about a pre-9/11 theatrical release. The plot of the film centers on Hugh Jackman, who plays this brilliant hacker who's kind of caught delving into government secrets and a government program and messing it all up. And he just kind of did it for fun. So when they arrest him, he does some jail time, and he comes back out after serving his time with the stipulation that he is not to use a computer, not to even touch a computer. I don't know exactly how they regulate that, but he's not allowed around computers. Meanwhile, there's this sort of shadowy organization that's headed up by John Travolta and sort of his right-hand lady, which is Halle Berry. I'll let Adam get his two cents in here on this in a second, because I know he has a favorite scene in Swordfish.
everyone does. That was why everyone saw that movie. That was why I went to go see that movie.
That was why she was paid an extra $500,000, too, which was an interesting bit. But basically, John Travolta and Halle Berry and Vinnie Jones is in there too as the sort of shadowy organization that recruits Jackman's character as a hacker to basically upload this virus into a banking system that's going to funnel almost $10 billion worth of money into their account. It turns out that they're sort of a counter-terrorist organization, but they use terrorism as a way to get their funds and to get their message out. So it's not the best written script in the world, but it's fun with
you know who wrote that script?
Skip Woods.
Exactly, the guy who brought us Hitman and A Good Day to Die Hard.
Exactly.
Fuck that
I
guy.
Feel like this that, so he might have had a little bit more, I don't know if integrity is the word, but he was at least a little more organic at that point. Anyway, so the script isn't the greatest thing. They do have a lot of big action sequences and big set pieces and crazy sort of misdirections. There's a lot in common with the tone, or at least the half of the tone of Olympus Has Fallen, where it was supposed to be a fun action movie without worrying about the realistic side of things. The reason I'm bringing up Swordfish today, I was actually working at a Blockbuster. Yes, the stereotypes are true. I was working at a Blockbuster pre and post 9/11. When I came back from break, after 9/11 had happened, and I came back to the video store, Swordfish was actually being released on, it was video and DVD at the time. As soon as we put them up, we got I don't know if somebody complained or if the fact that there were like terrorist elements in Swordfish. all the copies got pulled from the shelves. As soon as they came back from being rented, we had to pull them, set them aside. I think a lot of them had to be destroyed. Within a couple of weeks...
Were you involved in the destruction of Swordfish DVDs? Was there like a burning, like a bonfire in the back of the Blockbuster?
Like, VHS, they all had to be broken down and destroyed. Like, literally. Like,
censorship.
So, I kept the copies. Don't tell anybody. Don't tell that secret. But and then they all came back. All the boxes had like this big warning label on the front that was like, "Warning: contains realistic terrorist elements."
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean that, and that was. I just want to recommend that because that was the mindset of the time. This was a theatrical release that dealt with terrorism on American soil, sort of. So domestic terrorism. But then it was released on home video after 9/11, and there was such a stigma to it that you couldn't actually get your hands on it, which I think probably did better for its DVD sales. But if you haven't lived through it or you didn't realize that was like kind of the mentality at the time, it went so far as to affecting sales and viewership of Swordfish. So definitely to check out, just to kind of bring you back to that pre-9/11 time when John Travolta was slightly less crazy. And Hugh Jackman was just coming off of his role in X-Men 2, so he was just getting started. Oh, and Adam, why else should we watch Swordfish?
Halle Berry's breasts.
There it is.
A lot of money to do a topless scene. That was like a big I remember that was like a big marketing piece of the movie. Like, I remember watching the MTV Movie Awards, and she like presented, you know, because the MTV Movie Awards are just a big marketing thing. And she was like, "And if you go see Swordfish, you get to see these," and pointed to her breasts. I was like, "All right, I'm gonna go see that movie."
That's 250 grand city.
Wow. Well, that's a great story. Not Swordfish, but Dave, your story, that is fantastic. Adam, what is your recommendation?
I'm recommending something a bit different than Swordfish. It's Spike Lee's 2002 film, 25th Hour. This movie was actually in development before 9/11 happened, and it was still going forward, and they were getting ready to shoot. And Spike Lee had two decisions. It takes place in New York City, and New York is kind of a big character in the film. He could ignore the events of 9/11 or incorporate them into the film, and he decided to do the latter. And the result is one of my favorite movies of all time, and it's a really powerful piece of cinema. It was the first film to directly address the 9/11 attacks, and it does so in a really interesting manner. They're not a major plot point of the film, but it's an undercurrent because all of these characters are living in New York City and they're dealing with the effects. The movie came out in December of 2002, so it was a little over a year later. The script was written by David Benioff, who is actually running Game of Thrones right now with D.B. Weiss, based on his own book. And it stars Edward Norton. He plays a guy named Monty. He's getting ready to begin serving a 7-year prison sentence for dealing drugs. And the entire movie takes place on his last day of freedom, kind of dealing with his friends and walking around the city and coming to terms with the notion that, you know, his life is about to change pretty abruptly, and he's going to have to say goodbye to, you know, life as he knows it for a long time. And the cast, it's a great cast. It's Philip Seymour Hoffman, Barry Pepper, Rosario Dawson, Anna Paquin, Brian Cox. And there's this brilliant scene between Philip Seymour Hoffman and Barry Pepper, and they're in Barry Pepper's apartment, and it's done in one take, and they're looking out the window, and outside the window is Ground Zero. And I think they filmed this in the beginning of 2002, so it was directly after it happened, and they have this really, really long dialogue scene that's just excellent about kind of, you know, not like Barry Pepper doesn't want to move away. He can't sell his apartment because the money, like the value of the apartment isn't greater anymore, but it's got this great undercurrent of kind of just like a big fuck you to the terrorists and like what they did to New York City. It's a really, really powerful movie, and it's got brilliant performance, great performance by Edward Norton. I highly suggest you check it out. It's one of Spike Lee's best. I mean, Do the Right Thing is brilliant, but I think this is right up there with Do the Right Thing. So definitely check it out.
Absolutely. Also like to add, Terrence Blanchard's score is phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love 25th Hour. And also just to hop onto that, it's a film that brings 9/11 into its world, but it's not an overt 9/11, I don't think, dominates the film. It doesn't take over
the story or anything like that.
It's a powerful story on its own.
Yeah, it's not like a major plot point or anything. It's just the fact that Spike Lee incorporated in the story, like, this is New York City right now. Like, this is the current. This is what these people are living in. So the story of 25th Hour isn't changed, but the world they're living in is.
Right. Okay, I will go with something less serious. I am going to go with 1997's Air Force One, which is the film I think Olympus Has Fallen is trying to be, except A, Olympus Has Fallen is in the wrong point in time, and B, it's not fun, whereas Air Force One is lots of fun. For those who haven't seen it, Harrison Ford plays the president, and he's on Air Force One, and he thinks everything's okay, but he's Kazakhstan or he's Russian, it doesn't matter. He's this terrorist general that's been taken prisoner, and Gary Oldman and his band of terrorists sneak aboard posing as the press, and then they take over Air Force One, and their point is to take the president hostage, but the president gets away, and they're going to put him in the escape pod to make sure he's safe. But the president used to be a soldier, and he's like, no, I got to save my family. My wife and daughter are on the plane. So he's up there trying to stop the terrorists, and on the ground is the vice president, played by Glenn Close. And just to punch Olympus Has Fallen in the face another time, that film is so roundabout that it says, well, we could make the VP the person in charge, but instead we'll put the VP and the president in the same location so that now the Speaker of the House, played by Morgan Freeman, is in charge, which is so weird. Just let it be the VP. That makes more sense. So Glenn Close is on the ground trying to direct things and trying to help out, and you have Harrison Ford. It's just so well-paced. Wolfgang Petersen directed it. I think he had a real strong time in the 90s. He also did In the Line of Fire. And to tie that into Olympus Has Fallen, Dylan McDermott should never be in the Secret Service, ever. He never goes well for him at all. So stay out of the Secret Service, Dylan McDermott. Back to Air Force One. It's got great action scenes, but it's still at tight quarters, and it builds to this great conclusion. And this was a film where you hadn't really been on Air Force One before. You had sort of been in, like, you know, oh, they're in the comfy chairs, but it feels like all that kind of detail of it. And I remember going to the theater and seeing it. I got one of the large drinks, and the drink had an entire diagram of Air Force One on it with all these cool little facts, because the drinks are gigantic. So I would say if Olympus Has Fallen is not fun, Air Force One is the film that Olympus Has Fallen is trying to be, but it's so much better. So I would strongly recommend Air Force One. It's a great way to kill sort of a weekend afternoon. It's just a fun movie, so check that out.
Fun performance by Gary Oldman.
Fun performance, and Harrison Ford being like, get off my plane, which is one of his... When they do the Harrison Ford retrospective on his life, that will be in there. That clip will always be in there. So, Air Force One. Okay. Today marks the one-year anniversary of this podcast, and I would like to thank all four of our listeners for tuning in. We have a blast doing it, and I'm happy to do it, and I'm glad that we've kept doing it for a year. A year ago, we were talking about the Hunger Games, so things declined somewhat, and I guess we could have even talked about how March is not necessarily the gold mine of all, but then again, Oz the Great and Powerful made some serious cash, so maybe Hollywood is on to something. In any event, it's been great doing this. We're going to keep doing it. I'm not exactly sure what we're going to talk about next week. As we head into the summer, things get easier, I feel, in terms of the movie, because also those are the big movies. Everyone gathers around and sees those blockbuster films. Everyone's going to go see Iron Man 3. Everyone's going to go see Star Trek. That'll be... Oh, I can't wait to talk about Star Trek. That one's going to be a fun show. That's going to be
Star Wars? I hope this is still going when Star Wars comes out.
Nah, I think we're going to stop right after we finish talking about Star Trek. Actually, you know what? We can talk about Star Wars in the Star Trek episode, because it's the same damn movie. We already talked about Star Wars. We've talked about Star Wars twice on this show.
Every other week, we'll talk about Star Wars.
The latest Star Wars update. Yeah. The Collision and Star Wars. Okay, so if you want to keep up with the Collision podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Matt Goldberg. Adam, where can we find you on Twitter?
At Adam Chu.
And Dave?
@DrClaw, MD.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll be back with you next week.